After an accident, minutes matter. Your words and actions matter even more. You need help, and you need it now. This is David vs. Goliath, brought to you by Dolman Law Group Accident Injury Lawyers, a boutique firm with a reputation for going head-to-head with the insurance company giants and putting people over profits.
Hi, I'm Stan Guype. I'm here with my partner, Matt Dolman, and we're here today on another episode of the David vs. Goliath podcast. We got kind of an interesting topic today. It's something not a lot of people think about until you hear about it. It's heavy metals in baby food. You may hear it referred to as toxic baby food or harmful baby food. And it almost sounds like an oxymoron because we all think of baby food as perhaps being the very safest thing you could possibly feed someone, especially a baby. We're starting to find out that that may not always be the case. So, Matt, just kind of tell everyone a little bit about what this claim's about.
Sure. So these have been around actually for a little bit now. And, you know, the judicial panel on multidistrict litigation, JPML, last week decided to consolidate all the heavy metal baby food lawsuits that have been filed in federal courts throughout the country. And they consolidated in the Northern District of California in front of Judge Jacqueline Corley, who I believe, you know, the plaintiff bar seems pretty happy about her selection. These cases have been around, though, in floating around California state court for several years now. And plaintiffs are 0-2. You know, last case was dismissed on summary judgment back in September of 2023 by Judge Lawrence Riff. And it's the causation issue that we get to. You know, when it comes to general causation, we know that lead, arsenic, these are deadly heavy metals in sufficient dosages. But in insufficient dosages, the cumulative effect on neurodevelopmental, on a baby's developing brain, it causes neurodevelopmental disorders. The problem we have is specific causation. It's very difficult to show that one specific product when, oftentimes infants will use many different products. It's very difficult, and the judge even quoted you, I quote him when saying this, and then I'll actually just state a proposition of what he stated, that the one plaintiff utilized seven different types of baby foods. It was very difficult and almost impossible, and he said it would be quite the leap in logic to say that any one specific baby food caused the neurodevelopmental issues the baby suffered from, which was autism. This is different, and I want to contrast this from acetaminophen. We saw the acetaminophen autism cases. That came down to general causation. We were able to show there was a correlation between in utero exposure to acetaminophen and a greatly increased risk of neurodevelopmental disorders such as autism and ADHD. They weren't able to show causation, though. In this one, we know there's causation. There's no question that lead and arsenic in sufficient dosages are going to cause neurodevelopmental disorders. What we're going to have trouble showing, what they've had trouble showing so far, at least the plaintiff bar has, is showing that one specific product or even the products in use and in tandem with one another causes this issue, because toxic heavy metals such as arsenic, such as lead, these are found in the soil. They're found in water. They're found in the air. And they cross the placental barrier. So there is in utero exposure already. You test any individual, you're going to find some level of heavy metals in their blood. How do we show that the actual usage of this particular food, this particular rice, this particular applesauce, cause neurodevelopmental disorder? That's the hurdle that the plaintiffs have to overcome. And that's what's been difficult to date in these state court hearings. And so far, two cases have been lost in summary judgment. But I believe that a new slew of experts are going to be introduced to this case in the MDL. I mean, there's going to be a very talented group of lawyers going to be leading the charge in this case. But are we going to get the actual specific causation? General causation is not the issue. It's specific causation here.
Okay, so I'm going to back you up just a little bit because you said a lot there.
I know, it was a word salad, and I was stuttering on puttering too as well.
But here's the thing. Like, the basic concept we're talking about is, I mean, heavy metals, lead and arsenic, okay? We don't have to do a podcast over the fact that you shouldn't either one of those in any substantial quantity. This is known, like back from lead paint, right? We know this is already set.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The real question is, what's going on with lead and arsenic in baby foods? And what's happening is we've started to find over some testing that, you know, levels of lead and arsenic at times in baby foods, certain specific foods in particular, are sometimes 5, 10, 20 times what's considered the safe level by the FDA. It's not like someone's going to eat one can of baby food and suddenly have a neurodevelopmental delay, right? This is a cumulative effect over time because the concentration of heavy metals in baby foods is higher than what's allowed by the FDA and can, you know, over time lead to autism and other neurodevelopmental delays, correct?
Correct. But also keep in mind that the FDA has actually stated before there is no safe level of arsenic. There is no safe level. There's no acceptable safe level of that.
I guess that's true. I want to say, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm going off of pure memory, and this could be completely inaccurate, but I want to say like the levels of lead, is it like 5 parts per million? Something like that is like your lead threshold. And
I believe that to be correct. And in the 2021 Congressional Subcommittee report, they found that there is an astronomically high amount of it, but the problem is showing that any specific one product had a uniform amount of this. That's the issue we have at hand, is that from product to product, and even the same exact manufacturer across their product, let's say you pick up Gerber baby food today, you can pick up 10 pouches of baby food, and 8 of those pouches have normal levels, but 2 have exceedingly high levels, so it's not uniform across the board. That's the issue we have. That's the issue that the plaintiff bar is going to have to overcome in this particular project.
Okay. Well, you know, and I look at some of these, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of look at a little bit of stuff, and Google has brought me up to speed on things. So some of what I say may or may not be accurate. What I'm looking at, though, it seems like when they're testing some of these baby foods, right? When you as a parent are shopping for a product, right? You're in the store, you're looking, and you're trying to buy the healthiest product for your kid. And you're not there with a bunch of scientists. You're not pulling product out of the bottle. You're not testing anything. You're looking at the label.
Correct.
That's your source of information, right? You're looking at this. So if something says organic, you're assuming this is the healthier product for your kid.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Well, one of the, and I'm looking at this, and it looks like Earth's Best baby food, right? I'm not throwing them under the bus in particular, but one set of testing on Earth's Best baby food advertised as an organic product meant to be healthier for your kid. They test this and it's got 70 times the FDA recommended amount of lead, or the FDA limit. They don't recommend it, but the FDA limit, right? So we're not talking like, hey, it's over about 10%. We're talking 7,000%, 70 times the safe level.
Yeah.
And this is just one thing they test. So suddenly over time, you're looking, hey, if these things are supposed to be safe at 5 parts per million, what's happening if you're dedicated to feeding your kid organic baby food and making him healthy? And suddenly you're choosing the brand that is 70 times as contaminated with lead as the FDA allows. And now you start to notice something's wrong with your child, right? You're not putting it together at the time. No one's telling you, hey, this has got extra lead in it. You don't find out till now.
Sure.
As a parent, how do you go about looking into this? Like, where do you find information?
Well, and the bigger problem you have is, so then what's your alternative is organic. But then we found in Consumer Reports ran an article in June of 2022 that showed that organic products have often exceedingly high levels of arsenic and lead. They're, again, stating the obvious and what we said earlier, the FDA has previously gone on record saying there is no safe, acceptable level of arsenic. But the problem, again, is showing that any one particular product, and if you're testing, let's say, again, Gerber baby food, you could test the same product. It has different amounts in each product, each specific pouch. That's a hurdle that they're going to have to overcome in this case. It's showing one, that again, specific causation, that one product caused client X's condition, and then showing that this is uniform across the board.
So you're a consumer. I mean, I remember my son eating baby food, right? I can remember going in buying baby food.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I think I was more concerned about the flavor he wanted or whatever it was than the actual brand. But I assumed it was all safe, right? I didn't assume there was any chance any of this stuff was unsafe in any way. And you're picking
out. Why would you?
Yeah, why would you? Here's the thing. How does one prove? Like, I didn't keep any receipts. I didn't keep receipts from the baby food. Right now, the only proof of use you've got is me saying this is what I fed my kid.
Mm-hmm.
Is that basically what we're looking at? Are we looking at situations where consumers need to have this sort of documentation to show that they bought a specific baby food?
We've seen this across the board before, so this isn't the first time that an over-the-counter product, and we've seen it before in over-the-counter pharmacology cases. You know, you look at Zantac or acetaminophen. At least in acetaminophen, we were looking at sometimes OBGYN records because what did the mother report taking when she was pregnant? But on Zantac, we're relying more on receipts. You know, you're going back through your credit card statements. How specific are they going to be? Are they going to require, you know, an attestation clause where the client's going to have to sign an affidavit? There's going to be a proof of usage issue. I don't know what parameters this judge is going to set yet and what the plaintiff steering committee is going to agree to or lobby for, and along with the lead defense counsel. And eventually they're going to have to come to some agreement and with some uniform standard by which we're going to show proof of usage. But yes, that will be one of the two biggest hurdles in this case. The other being obviously, again, not general causation. We're going to get past that. That's easy. It's just, we all know what lead and arsenic do. It's specific causation showing that product X caused Y and how you're going to show that, and showing that product X across the board uniformly has high amounts of lead, arsenic, cadmium, and other heavy metals.
So this lawsuit, when we're looking at these high levels of arsenic, lead, mercury, these dangerous heavy metals in baby food, is it only certain baby foods or is it across the board?
If you look at the Congressional Subcommittee report from 2021, it talks about root-based vegetables and rice-based products have the highest amounts. But across the board, they all tend to have what would be considered unacceptable levels. But then again, though, these are found in the environment. They're found in soil samples. They're found in water. They're found in air. How do we show? I mean, I know what the plaintiff bar, or should say the leaders in the plaintiff steering committee on this master, what they're going to do. I'm not at liberty to sit here and discuss that. We've been in conversations, obviously, that we've been privy to. But it's going to be a hurdle. It's still going to be a tough case. But to juxtapose this case to the acetaminophen autism cases that we just saw, on December 7th of 2023, they had the Daubert hearings in New York, and Judge Denise Coate eventually excluded the three main experts the plaintiffs put up, although that MDL is still on life support because afterwards, a few plaintiff lawyers were, and I think this was ingenious, but we'll see how this works out, but they put forth, they filed new lawsuits, but put forth a new expert, Roberta Ness, who chaired, I think, the Department of Medicine at the University of Texas. And so they're proposing that that expert was not excluded, and she has a different methodology arriving at her conclusions that exposure, in utero exposure to acetaminophen, can lead to an increased risk for autism. But to juxtapose the cases, this is a little different. So in the acetaminophen cases, the FDA was our biggest opponent. There is no other safe alternative for, you know, pregnant women. There's no other pain medication they could take besides acetaminophen. And the FDA did not want to come out on record and state that, you know, this is dangerous. Because sometimes the cure is worse than the problem. Well, then what would happen? All we can show is an increased risk. We can't show that, you know, any one child, their autism was related to acetaminophen exposure. We can just show it just increases the risk across a sample size. And also, you can't test pregnant women. And you can't subject them to rigorous testing of something we know that it could be dangerous to the unborn fetus. So that made the acetaminophen autism cases very difficult. This is a little bit different than what we're going to be seeing in the heavy metal toxic baby food cases. But again, what we have here is, and I guess it's almost like a stigmatized population of individuals out there who are tired of hearing product X causes autism. What are we blaming autism on next? So that's what you're going to hear a lot of that chatter. And again, it just gets down to, again, the brass tacks of specific causation. That's going to be the issue front and center. What I do like is, you know, you never want to bet on the jockeys, you bet on the horses. But in this case, you know, you have the leaders of this lawsuit are three phenomenal lawyers. You know, you're looking at Brent Wisner, who was in his mid-30s, scored a $1 billion verdict against Monsanto or Bayer, which bought Monsanto in the Roundup cases. Amy Wagstaff, who's had several humongous verdicts against, again, in the Roundup litigation against Monsanto, which is bought by Bayer. And Alexandra Walsh, who clerked on SCOTUS, who was a partner at a huge New York City firm and has been a leader in the plaintiff bar for several years now. And these are three phenomenal lawyers who are leading the charge. I like the plaintiff steering committee in this case. It's a tough hurdle. We haven't seen it yet successful in state court, but we've only seen a limited sample size.
let's just say I'm a parent, right? I've got a child who's been diagnosed with some form of disorder on the autism spectrum, right?
Sure.
How do I know if I need to look into a potential baby food case or whether baby food may have been the cause of my child's autism? What is it that should make me concerned?
I would look at the products, and obviously our website is a resource and it's a wealth of information. I would look at Bound Wisner's website, Lawsuit Information Center, which is Miller Joyce, or just do a just general research on the internet. There's several products that have been shown to have exceedingly high levels of lead and arsenic. And how much was your child exposed to? But again, this is still speculative. At the end of the day, no one's ever going to say that. Let me give you an example, for instance. We know that cigarettes cause lung cancer, but we can't say that your smoking is the one reason why you have, is the only reason why you have lung cancer. You can get lung cancer absent smoking cigarettes. You could smoke cigarettes for years and never get lung cancer. But at least there's a much stronger causal link. This is a little bit more of a spurious causal link. Not saying that it doesn't exist. We know that lead and arsenic are very dangerous. And we know that cumulative exposure can lead to neurodevelopmental disorders. No one's questioned that either. But it's tougher to show that product X caused Y. It's not as obvious as smoking cigarettes for years going to cause lung cancer. So to jump to that conclusion that I don't want mothers sitting there, you know, blaming themselves because they gave their child Gerber baby food or Nestle baby food or Happy Earth or whatever other companies you want to sit here and label. It's tough to say that, just like saying that, you know, in utero exposure to acetaminophen increases the risk, but we can't say that 100% caused autism. Autism, 85% of the cases are caused by genetics. There's an epigenetic component to it. And that's the environmental exposures can also alter your DNA. And based on your DNA, you could be more susceptible to specific environmental exposures. And that can cause that in and of itself is the environment combined with your DNA can cause the very issues that you're suffering from. And that causes a whole host of maladies, not limited to neurodevelopmental disorders. I hope that made sense.
Yeah, it did. But how does a parent know if they've got a potential claim? Like, how do they know if this is a suit they need to look into?
Does your child have a neurodevelopmental disorder, namely autism, ASD 1, 2, or 3? Some lawyers are also looking at ADHD. The problem with ADHD is so many confounding factors, but does your child have a neurodevelopmental disorder? And were they exposed to high levels, or I should say sustainable, consistent use of these baby food products? And I would look at the specific baby food products that are named on these various websites and do some research. And if you can show that you use this for a period of time and your child has a neurodevelopmental disorder, that is a possibility that increased the risk that didn't cause it. It could be a whole host of reasons that cause autism or cause neurodevelopmental disorders, namely genetics. But genetics combined with environmental exposures, that's the whole practice of epigenetics and the whole study of epigenetics. That discipline is environmental triggers can change your DNA.
So someone can go to one of these websites that say Lawsuit Legal News. Right.
Sure. It's our site. We're not trying to plug our site, but yes.
Well, I'm trying to plug our site. I'm not going to be shy about that. You know, if you're going to pick one site to go to, you should go to our site. But
sure.
Lawsuit Legal News will give you the list of baby foods you need to be concerned about, correct? The things that have been previously identified to be those brands that are of concern.
Correct.
Right. So as a parent, you've got an autistic child. You've got someone that you're concerned about. You can go to our website, see if the foods that are listed, the brands that are listed there are the brands that you used. And if they are, then you can take the next step, call in, give some more information, see if maybe you qualify to be a part of this claim. Let me ask you, and this is kind of like a dumb question or naive question, but who the hell's putting lead and arsenic in the baby food? Like, how's it getting in there?
It's not they're putting it in the baby food. I mean, it's already in the soil samples. It's in the soil samples where the vegetables are grown in. So you're breathing this in all day long. It's in our water. It's in the air. Any one of us, if we get studied, we're going to have some levels, not just of toxic baby food, toxic heavy metals, rather. We're also going to have some measurable level of PFOS and PFAS, which are forever chemicals. And that's part of the AFFF firefighting cases. And some of these chemicals are going to be, they're just found in the environment naturally. And there's a host of reasons why they're found in the environment. And most of it's man-made, and we are to reason to blame. We destroyed our own environment. But were these levels discernible? Were they measurable? And did these manufacturers, could they have prevented this? I can't answer that. That's above my pay grade. But we believe that they've been aware of this for years and have not taken this off the market. That we do know.
Well, I mean, that's like, could they have prevented it? The answer is yes. I mean, you don't leave the product on the market once you realize you may have an unsafe product.
But if you were to ask me, how do you remove it from the, you know, product, and how do you create safer alternatives when we already know that organic baby foods have incredibly high levels, according to Consumer Reports, I don't know that answer. That is above my pay grade.
Okay, so there may be a situation where manufacturers need to look at excluding certain products from their baby food lineup. Certain products may be higher in arsenic, lead, heavy metals. Right.
Remember, it took 30 years in tobacco litigation to prove that tobacco was the cause of lung cancer.
Oh,
we knew the Surgeon General's report that came out in the 50s, but it went on for years. This lawsuit may be ahead of its time. We don't know that. And that's only going to be proven up in the court over the next 2 years, maybe 3 years.
Well, you know, here's the thing. The only part of this lawsuit that may be ahead of its time or something other than common sense is baby food containing heavy metals, okay? We've known, you know, since we were young. Like, I'm 50 now, okay? At 7 years old, I knew not to eat lead. Like, I remember people telling you, you know, the lead in your pencil could be hazardous, all right? And we'd already moved to graphite at that point in time, but I think that was still a legacy from 20 years before when actually people were worried about lead in pencils and pencil lead.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, so we've done that. We're aware of the dangers with it. Okay. Every one of us knew growing up, you had to be careful about the mercury that was in the thermometer, right? If the thermometer broke, you weren't going to eat the mercury. No matter how cool the mercury may have looked, you're not supposed to play with the mercury because it's hazardous, right?
Sure.
Jurors are going to know this when they walk in the courtroom, right? Never going to have to convince them of this. So what we're looking at is essentially being able to prove that this level of lead that at times could be 70 times what the FDA recommended, that this exposure over time actually caused this.
Not the FDA recommends, the FDA allows
yeah, allowable amounts. It's true. Yeah.
There's no recommended amount.
So we're 70 times the FDA maximum. People are feeding this to their kid. We know the product itself causes neurological deficiencies. It doesn't seem like it's too much of a leap, right, to jump out there and say this likely contributed or had a chance to be contributive and to the problem my child's having.
No, but to again quote or at least paraphrase what Judge Riff said in the California case that was dismissed in summary judgment last September 2023, is it was a leap in logic to show that one particular product, plaintiffs could not show, they did not meet the burden to show that one particular product caused that child's neurodevelopmental delays or disorders. They couldn't do it.
And I imagine, I guess that's where we're going to be at again, right? That's the hurdle.
Correct. In the article I read earlier today from Reuters, both Alexandra Walsh and Brent Wisner were both quoted as saying they believe they can cure that and they can account for it and they will do so in subsequent filing. So this is going to be interesting to see this play out over the next few years. It's going to be a huge lawsuit, though. When you think of the spectrum of individuals or the population, rather, demographic individuals who have neurodevelopmental delays that are going to blame it now on toxic or heavy metal baby foods.
Well, there's so much information I know we could talk about on this probably and go all day, but I think we're kind of starting to run out of time here and kind of need to get this wrapped up.
I mean, we'll come back onto this. I mean, this is going to be a fluid issue for the next couple of years.
Oh, yeah, there'll be updates and stuff like that where we're going to be bringing these cases. We're going to be involved in the litigation. But in the meantime, right, if someone's got questions, Matt, how do they find us? How do they find information about the heavy metals and toxic baby food claims and sort of look a little deeper into whether or not they might have a claim for their own child?
Yeah, you can go onto our website. There's two of them, actually. One that we have a mass tort news site called lawsuitlegalnews.com, which is a wealth of information on the latest trends and stories regarding mass torts and also covers each practice area. Or you can go to our website, dolmanlaw.com, D like in David, OLMANLAW.com. And on there, we also have a page on the toxic heavy metal baby food cases. And you can reach us anytime at 833-552-7274. That's a toll-free number. You could always email me at Matt, M-A-T-T, at Dolmanlaw, D-O-L-M-A-N-L-A-W.com. and I'm happy to put you in touch with one of our lawyers, or I can walk you through what's going on in the heavy metal baby food cases. And I appreciate everyone's time. And thanks again, Stan.
Perfect. There's been another episode of the David vs. Goliath podcast. Thanks for listening with us. If you ever need to find us anywhere else, dolmanlaw.com or information on toxic baby food is also legal news. I look forward to the next episode.
This episode of David vs. Goliath is over, but your journey is just getting started. To share your story with us, visit dolmanlaw.com. That's dolmanlaw.com. Or call 866-965-6242. The insights and views presented in David vs. Goliath are for general information purposes only and should not be taken as legal advice for any individual case or situation. The information presented is not a substitute for consulting with an attorney, nor does tuning into this podcast constitute an attorney-client relationship of any kind. Any case result information provided on any portion of this podcast should not be understood as a promise of any particular result in a future case. Dolman Law Group. Big firm results, small firm personal attention.